Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Podcart, and welcome to another ridiculously awesome guest who
we'll see.
Yeah, James from Twilight Sad.
Afternoon. It is afternoon, isn't it?
It is. Mm. Yeah, I think the little shits are about to finish school soon.
Shall we hear them going past and
well,
stuff
hopefully
like that?
Not, but we'll see.
You'll hear that little shit talk.
Thank you so much for doing this.
That's all right. I just realised I'll literally stay 6 minutes so drive away from you.
I don't know if that is a good thing for you.
It's just, I don't usually leave the house anyway, so you can see me. I just feel like somebody peering out the curtains every so often.
I've asked you to pick six tracks that mean a lot to you and have soundtracked your life almost, I guess.
Yeah.
I was listening to them. I put them on a playlist and I was listening to them yesterday, and I realised that you can definitely hear the way that they've inspired you.
I wouldn't say that.
You definitely not ripped, but Elizabeth Fraser, the vocal, there's different things that I picked up on which I never thought about before, which is going to be interesting when we're talking about them.
Cool.
So, how are you, first of all?
I'm good. What happened? What I've been up to?
I've just got
back from festival at the weekend.
How was that?
It was good. It was rainy. It rained until we played our set and we were in a tent. And it was just like, we were kind of hoping the rain was going to stay on so people would all come in. But it was good. And I got to walk about and stuff. And it's a long way. I didn't realise how far away it was, actually. But got to go on a ferry. Aye, it was good.
Yeah. And we'll talk about the other massive tour that you did later. But is it, are things quiet for now?
I'd say they're quiet, but like in the background we're working away. I'm always working on, when we're back on, off tour, sorry, Andy and I are like always working on stuff.
Yeah.
Now it's just like, when I suppose it's just like we've got to make the best of the downtime we've got, and ultimately at this point really want to write as much as possible because I feel like there's loads of stuff to still say within what we're doing. So, and I've got some other things that I'm working on and got a job as well, so yeah.
Yeah. So that's what I was going to ask you, if whether you get to do this full time, but obviously you're still working.
I suppose that's a question that I can kind of answer with one of the tracks that I'm going to pick as well. I can go deeper into that when we talk about a certain band that I've helped.
Perfect. So you have picked the Manic Street Preachers as one of your tracks.
Yeah.
That's the first one I've got. So Design for Life. So when did the Manics first come into your life?
They were the first ones that did come in, to be honest. I think I've said a few times, but the Manics were like, I was in, you remember William Lowe, the supermarket?
Yeah.
And I was going around the supermarket with my mum, and I think I'd seen Top of the Pops the week before, and like Design for Life was the song that was played on that, and I was just like, wow, that's amazing. hadn't really listened to indie music. I hadn't even met like anybody in the band at that point. And my sister was really into kind of Britpop and stuff like that. And so I'd hear stuff coming through her walls and stuff like that, and just been listening, going, "Oh, what's that?"
Yeah.
But the Manics were never one of them. And then I saw them on TV, and I slipped the Everything Must Go album underneath, like, I don't know, like the Rice Krispies or something, so my mum wouldn't see it. And then we got to the checkout, and it was too late by that point, so she had to buy it for me. And then I got home, and then it was just pretty much obsessed with that record. Because it was the first record that I'd ever really listened to from start to finish, yeah. And it was my record. It wasn't something I got from my sister, and just listened to it on my CD, Sony Walkman,
yeah,
kind of type thing. And then my sister, for my Christmas that year or my birthday, I can't remember, got me tickets to go and see them at the SCCC, and that was the first gig I'd ever been to as well.
Wow.
So they were my first introduction of going, oh man, it would be amazing to do this. This would be amazing to do that. Never thought I would ever, like, come close to being in a band or, like, I don't know, I've been in a band or performing, so it's quite strange that it's turned out that way. But I also remember I was speaking to Grant from Frying Rabbit not that long ago. I speak to him all the time, but he was saying that was his first gig as well, and he was at that one. And then there's a few other people I've talked to, they were like, oh yeah, I was at that as
no
well.
No way.
So,
so how old were you when you got that album?
So I would have been, my maths is great, I would have been 12.
Wow.
I remember going with my sister, and it was phenomenal. Even though the SCCC is not my favourite room in the world. It was still, for a first experience of just walking around and seeing everything for the first time and how a gig works, it was amazing. And then, when was it? It was before the last record came out. We got to support them in Edinburgh and Glasgow at the Barras.
That must have been absolutely surreal.
Ah, it was just, I remember Andy and I were just standing at the side of the stage, jaw dropped.
Yeah.
We both loved them as well. It was just this is very surreal, and meeting James watched both of our sets and our sound check and stuff, and they were lovely. I don't think Nicky wasn't feeling well, so he was just coming to the gig and then leaving, but he wrote some nice stuff about us on the internet after the tour had finished. But I was up the back of the Barrowlands with my sister watching the Manics. It was designed for life was on. Yeah, pretty much. It was before the last record came out, so it was quite... there was a lot of riding on that, but I was kind of felt like if it doesn't get better than this, then it's a nice wee thing to happen for us. We've always been very lucky that the bands that we've liked have been nice, which you'll...
Yeah, no,
some more of these
your playlist. So
yeah.
For you've probably been asked this a dozen times, but for people that might not know you guys, so you and Andy, was it you two that first... Got together.
Yeah, Andy, I went to high school with Andy, and basically I come from a small village called Banton,
yeah,
which is beside Kilsyth, and I was the only boy in my class, that's how small it was. So I turned up to high school and had no friends, and the girls, I had four girls in my class, and we all got split up into different classes and stuff, so it was just going and having just... That was pretty terrifying. But then Andy coming up and speak to me on the second or third day, I always pull him up about that, going, oh, thanks for leaving me hanging for a couple of days. It's probably what the first album was about. Okay, no. but then, yeah, he's basically the reason for me even liking a lot of these the bands that I'm being influenced by the music that we're influenced by, because he was handing me CDs in class and stuff. So if it wasn't for me meeting Andy, then I wouldn't be doing anything like what
yeah.
I've been doing, and I don't know what I would be doing. But he's been my best friend since I went to high school. So
that's crazy.
It's I've got him to thank for all this.
Yeah.
And we've still stayed best friends since. That's strange in the music industry.
It is, because there's so many, it seems to prove to be quite detrimental for a lot of people, because you've got that, I guess, that that line between love and hate.
Yeah, totally. But the thing is, like, we've never really fallen out. We've disagreed about, like, nothing more than just songs, really.
Yeah.
And I think we know each other's limits and what, I don't know, from growing up with each other. And I really respect him and think he's a bit of a genius. So,
yeah,
like, I've got him to thank for a lot of great things happening in my life. So I think I just kind of keep that in mind, even when we're getting on each other's nerves, if you know what I mean.
Before, when things started to get quite serious with the band, and you started, there must have been a point that you thought, okay, this is something that I could potentially do all the time. Did you speak to each other and kind of make any kind of promises or ground rules to each other about the future? Or has it always just been whatever happens, happens?
It's kind of been like a mixture of both, I think. I think that we've always, like, from when we started writing the songs, we've always really wanted to be like the bands that we kind of idolised, if you know what I mean, and not just have like a flash in the pan kind of album or single. It was like everything's been based around kind of longevity and like making records that actually matter, and to us to begin with, and trying to do stuff that like push ourselves as well. So there was, like, from when the first record came out, it wasn't like, oh, let's just try this and see how it goes. It was, in my head anyway, I always thought it'd be amazing to get to 5 albums. Now we're at 4. So it's like, I still feel like I've got the same mentality as that guy that was starting out at that point and want to keep on progressing and keep on getting to trying to get to the next level.
Yeah.
And trying to make things more exciting and put on different types of gigs and I just not just be a band, if that makes sense, like actually say something within what we're trying to do. And even though we don't actually come out and tell anybody what our music's about, there's an aesthetic there, I think, and it's about having everything come together. And I think that, yeah, we talk about stuff a lot, like every day actually. We're probably messaging each other about gigs or songs or just everything to do with being a band.
Yeah.
And we're still really excited about that, which is...
That's rare though, isn't
it?
Yeah,
I think so. Like when I talk to other people, like just other people that have been in bands, it all seems like it's... Yeah, I feel like we've got a different kind of mentality in a way.
Yeah, it's not a chore.
Yeah,
for you.
Yeah, it's everything. If you know what I mean, like without this, then I'm like, woof. There was a point where we were nearly not being able to do it, and it wasn't because we didn't want to. And that was heartbreaking, to be honest. That was like a really low time, and I think our friendship and belief in what we did kind of got us through that.
Yeah, so. Which is amazing. So the next band, which I think mean a lot to both of us, maybe different ways, so Mogwai, what track, I guess, or was it an album?
I think it is this track.
Yeah,
like, so I'm not going to pretend I was like there from the start stuff, because like I think I was still pretty... hopefully they don't listen to this and they'll be like, when I was still young. and they're now that they're ancient. I think it was MTV2 and it was like 120 minutes came on.
Yeah.
And this video for Hunted by a Freak came on.
Thank you.
Like, I was like, that's that video's amazing and that song's amazing. And I think I remember going into, like, FOP and if it was Avalanche, which is now Love Music, yeah, and seeing this, like, shiny cover for Happy Songs and being like, oh, that's cool. But never really kind of going, oh, I'll check that out. But then from watching that on TV and then putting two together, I was like, oh, I'm definitely going to pick that up the next time again. And then it was just like, instant. I was just like, phew. I think it must have been around. Must have been around when I was like 18 or 17.
Yeah.
And I'll be able to know if I again knew remember what year it came out, but I remember it was definitely like getting into Mogwai, and like that was around the time I've started to write the first record, like, and them influencing, like, weirdly as a guy that writes lyrics, like, after listening to them, so many ideas coming into my head, and like that still happens to this day when I listen to them. So it was like, I was always really worried that, like, when their first record came out as well, going, I really hope that they don't hate us. I really hope that they even just think we're a wee bit all right, like, because that would crush me. Yeah, because you know how opinionated they can be.
Yeah.
And I was just like, when met Stuart, and then we met the rest of the guys, and then they took us on tour, and they've been so good to us.
Yeah, like they've been so quite good. Instrumental into particularly with you.
Yeah, like that, as we were talking about, like, am I able to do this full time?
Yeah.
It's like hand to mouth. Like, yeah, like it would be, I would really, not that we make any more money at all, like, it was, that's been a big struggle over the years as well, like, that's been the thing where it's, that's the constant thing that's always over your head when you're doing this stuff, and nobody's, like, oh, we're obviously not doing it for the money, because we would have finished a long time ago if we were, but there was a point in my life as well that it was really tough, I was signing on, and I couldn't afford to do anything, really, like, really couldn't. And then Craig from Rock Action, who, like, is the manager of Mogwai's label, asked the guys if it would be all right if I could come in and help out part-time when I was off tour, and that's saved, like, that's made me be able to do what I can do, and it's just, like, mind-blowing that band have done that for me, and I'll be forever grateful for them,
yeah,
as well. But they've also done more than that as well for the band. Like, the other songs that I'm going to talk about as well, is they've introduced us to other people.
Yeah.
And they've like, when they took us on tour, they made sure it was comfortable for us, and they did everything that they could to promote the band and not just make us a support band, if you know what I mean. Like, usually sometimes on support tours you can kind of, like, be shunned out to the side and all that kind of stuff. I'd had some of the best times that we've been in this band over the two tours we've done. Three tours, I think. Well, like, include UK and the Europe tour together. Maybe not anymore. oops. I include that together, but those were some of those nights which I can't speak about.
Yeah.
Well,
but they, I think, I've unfortunately heard people say, you know, there's a bit of a clique in that community, that there's, like, you know, with Arab Strap and Mogwai and, you know, even Hubby and stuff, and you just, it's, I think it's more like you say, they take a real vested interest in who they like and who they care about,
yeah,
and they want to do stuff for them.
Totally.
So it's, I think if you're on the outside looking in, it might come across like that, but it really isn't.
No, I get that as well. Like, I do understand that. But, like, for me, it's just, yeah, they don't put up with any
shit.
Yeah. And, like, there's a lot, as we both know, there's a lot of shit and with people in bands and other things to do with music. And
yeah,
I think once you've been burned a few times with stuff like that, then you're a little bit more careful about the people that you let in, if you know what I mean. It's been great to be kind of on the inside for me, looking at working with the label. I mean, I basically just help out. Like,
yeah,
I'm not make I'm I just I'm there like if they need anything, and just kind of like, I'm not making any big, yes, this is happening. This is at least like, I'm just really happy to be there to help out in any way that I can with them. Aye, for me, they've, like, I went to see them in Edinburgh recently do the Atomic thing, and it was just, mind-blowing, really, to be honest. It was, maybe that's the wrong term to use.
No, I think that they think they are, and they're a consistent kind of inspiration, and I think that they've taken DIY, but taken it to a way and made it successful for them, which is amazing.
And their most successful records are the new ones as well, and it's just like they've got complete control of what they're doing, and it's just... It's like watching them, like when going to watch them, is just inspiring as well. Like it's just, I'm pretty much in awe of them quite a lot, like most of the time. And then we'll go meet them for a pint, and they'll just take a piss at me, which is brilliant. Some of this, they once, Barry and Stuart phoned me from like they were DJing in France, I think. And I was just around my friend's house having a pint, and they were like, "Hey, James," because they call me McMorrissey. So I was like, "All right, okay."
Why do they call you that?
Just because they think, like, I don't know, they sing like Morrissey in a Scottish accent. So cool. So they phoned me, like, we Mike, the drummer from the Smiths, was DJing with them, and he was just like, "Oh, he wants to speak to you. He's got a proposition for you." Like, and I was like, "Well, all right, like." I don't know, a wee bit steam. I was like, this is random. And he was like, he came on, he was like, "All right, James, how are you doing?" I don't know if that's a good...
That is quite good, he's like,
I'll go back into one accent. He was like, "We're getting back together for Coachella, but Morrissey's not wanting to do it, so we're wanting you to do it." I was just like, I knew it was a joke, but at the same time, I was like, I'm not going to tell one of the Smiths to bolt on the phone. Just like, if you want. And then the next thing, Stuart coming on the phone, just laughing his head off at me, going, you're funny. Just like, God. But stuff like that. But that's, they've got a great sense of humour as well.
Yeah.
Get fatter, then I on my own, cause I let those feelings haunt me, they control me, but today I'm letting go. You're more than just a photo album, you're more than what some people let you know. And if we ever make it home, I'll tell you all the things that shape me thus. Something falls in a phone box, but lost in a restaurant. We've got so much to discuss. Here, have you tried the blue ones? Yeah, I hear he's got some new ones. Sleep is not an option to me. Look at us just standing still. Look at them just posing pout, and we'll all be standing here until the pigs chuck us out.
You've kind of struck up a real friendship with all these, most of these artists that you're playing. Mm-hmm. So how did you first come into contact with these guys?
Well, growing up in Banton, it's like 20 minutes from Falkirk. And obviously Arbstrap are from Falkirk, and I went to college in Falkirk as well. So I know Falkirk very well, so knowing that there was a band from Falkirk as well. And then it was Andy that handed me the CD.
Mm-hmm.
Again, like, just going, you need to listen to this, you'll love it. And again, he was right. And they were like the, like, as I say, Mogwai were like heavily influenced me with lyrics. Arbstrap were just as instrumental, and like, I don't know, like, I only first wrote songs on the first record were the first ones I ever had written. I'd never known what to write about. And then certain things happened in my life, and then I listened to Arbstrap, and the way that they told stories through the songs just made so much sense to me, like, about being honest, and it just, that struck something in my, I really connected with it. And then from after listening to them, everything just kind of poured out, I suppose, if, yeah, you know what I mean. And I'm glad I didn't write anything up to that point either, because I didn't have any. I only feel that it's important to write something if you've got something to write about. And that's, once that stops, then I'll stop for a while until there is something that I need to feel like I have to get off my chest. They helped open the floodgates, I suppose, on that.
Yeah.
And then, like, again, like, I love both of their solo work as well. Like, I remember hearing Into the Woods by Malcolm for the first time, and just been blown away by it, and, mm-hmm, like, a brighter beat. And it's just, I love all Malcolm's solo stuff. I think he's like, also his lyrics as well are phenomenal. Like, just the Steak McCoy's line and that, and in the woods, it's just like,
yeah,
I'm just like, I could never think of that. That's phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I tried them after that, and they were great. See, for anybody that doesn't know what Steak McCoy's are, a brand of, well, they're a crisp.
A crisp, yeah.
so yeah, I knew it was so right. but then we got to know them as well, and recently I got to work with Aidan on, like, his film Where You're Meant to Be. Like, he asked me to sing backing vocals, mm-hmm, and come on the tour, and get steaming with him, basically. That was phenomenal. And that, have you seen the film?
I haven't not seen the film yet.
I suppose it's quite hard for me. I'm in the background singing the background vocals. Mm-hmm. I'm quite happy about that.
Yeah.
So I can kind of, I think I could look at it from a kind of non-objective view, and the fact that I got to go and see everything as well and those stories, but then seeing it all put together, I think it's brilliant.
The snippets I've seen look quite overwhelming emotionally.
It's is hilarious at some points. Yeah. Like, because he is hilarious, but he's also one of the most intelligent. Like, he's one of the best songwriters of all time in my opinion as well. And just his way with words is just phenomenal.
He's got a real gift of playing with your emotions. Like, he can take you from being really high to low within seconds.
It's a gift that he's got, and it's just to be able to witness that firsthand on that, and see other people like kind of like react to it and be on stage with him. I actually there was two or three times on stage where I cracked up and I couldn't sing because I was just laughing at him too much. Like, just his part's phenomenal. But we go to the cinema all the time now, and we go get steaming at the Alley Arms, and it's just, I call him a really good friend now, and it's but then and then they've announced that they're coming back and playing the Barras and stuff, and I'm on tour, so I miss it.
Oh
so,
my god, that's a gutter.
Yeah, and I missed the farewell gig as well that they had because I was on tour. But I'm definitely not complaining about being on tour this time.
So there was a turning point. Obviously, you talked about there was a really low point that you thought you were going to stop the band and everything. Mm-hmm. And when you announced the tour with this next band, The Cure, mm-hmm. I think everyone again was genuinely, there seems to be this sense of that your fans really root for you and they really are genuinely pleased, and me speaking as one, mm-hmm. When you got to do this tour, and when Robert covered one of your tracks, mm-hmm. it was everyone just my whole circle were just in complete awe.
Wider than snow, scream at the make-believe.
stone white, so delicate, lost in the cold. You are always so lost in the dark. Remembering you, how you used to be, so drowned you were angels, so much more than everything. Oh, for the last time, then slip away quietly.
Did you get a phone call or what happened?
Andy's a wido to begin with. So he was the guy that, and we taught Robert what a wido means recently. And he was like, oh yeah, Andy then. basically, we knew we wanted to do something special. We knew Robert was a fan because we'd emailed him if, well, Stuart passed on. But basically Stuart, on the second record, emailed Robert saying, I think there's this band you'll like, they're fans of you, just I'll send you the record. And then Robert got back saying, I've got them already, I'm already a fan. And I think then Stuart forwarded us an email, and then I think I ran around to my house just going, yes! And then we knew we wanted to do something special for, we talked about working on something together at an earlier point, and that didn't quite work out. And then we thought, well, how about one, we see if somebody wants to cover our songs for this new split 7-inch. And part of us was like, that's a bit big-headed, thinking somebody would want to do that. So just wait for the nose to come through the inbox. But and like he asked Robert, and I remember we're coming back from Mono. Andy and I had just done an in-store to promote this picture disc of I Can Give You All That You Don't Want. And Andy wasn't feeling that well, actually, so we were just driving back to Kilsyth, because Andy was up from London, and I still stayed out there. And he was in the back of the car, and he just went, I think he just, in that nonchalant way Andy does stuff, he just thought, amazing. Just like, what's amazing, man? And he's just like, and then he showed me an email, Robert said, I'd love to cover the song. We asked him to cover it, I think it was It Never Was the Same, because that was the single.
Yeah.
And he was like, you can I cover There's a Girl in the Corner? And basically we were both like, you can do whatever the fuck you want.
Yeah.
And also that when you think about it now, that does make a lot more sense that he did do that song. So like there was the yeah, I'll do that. And
so
then,
what was your reaction at that point when he told you about that email?
I just don't kind of, I don't know, really. It was quite dumbfounded. Just like, we're pretty, like, until something is there, because so many things have nearly happened.
That's
for us.
That's it, isn't it?
They've nearly happened. This has nearly happened, and that is like, that's happened more than the stuff that has happened. So we were like, okay, yeah, like, not, don't get too excited about this, just because, like, you know, like, there's things that happen and it might not happen, and just like, just try and keep a lid on it.
Mm-hmm.
But still inside, I was just going, and then we were in San Francisco and we'd finished the gig, and Andy came through and he said, I've got it. Like, and I was like, go what? And he was like, I've got it. And I was like, oh, shit. So we packed up our stuff and we all sat in the van and we listened to it like 3 or 4 times. I'm being modest, we listened to it about 9 or 10 times. And just loved it to begin with, loved it. And then just the sinking in of, that's one of our heroes singing their song. That's,
holy shit.
And just wanting to tell everybody as well. Like, and just, that was the hardest thing, to keep quiet. I'm good at keeping my mouth shut, to be honest, and that was so hard to not say anything or like, it was a big moment. That was, and I didn't think anything could get better than that.
Until,
and I still don't, like, I've got the 7-inch framed in my living room, and it, like, I kind of see it every day, and it's a reminder of, it's just a nice reminder of working hard, and nobody can ever take that away from
totally.
Us. You know, like, that's somebody who I consider to be one of the greatest songwriters of all time, and I mean the world does, you know, and that's like a big ringing endorsement, and it's like, it's just a really nice thing, and the fact that he did it for us, was, he didn't need to do it for us, and all the proceeds will go to charity, like, all that kind of stuff. It's just like,
I mean, and that's incredible.
Yeah.
And so at what point was it a turning point and you thinking, right, okay, I think we can still keep going as a band?
Well, I think the reaction to the last record, I think we'd sold out the Barras by that point, or we'd been, maybe not, we'd announced it and the tickets, no, we hadn't. Talking utter shit. We knew we were going to do the Barras, and that's after I was just playing the ABC in that December, and everything, there seemed to be a real like positivity around the new record, and it was, people were really, really into it, and like, more people were coming to the gigs, and so there was all like, at that point there was like a really good feeling amongst us all. And although, like, we still weren't getting the things that, like, bands, new bands get, like, that can help to get to the next level, but we've never been about that. Yes, that would be nice to have, and it'd be nice to get a wee bit of recognition with that kind of stuff, but there's something really great about where we are at the moment, that we've never had, like, a quarter of the things that bands need to get to the level that we're even at the moment.
Yeah.
And the reason we've got there is that touring and working and believing what we do, and the people who we look up to giving us the seal of approval. I mean, I wouldn't cheat, like, if you offered me all the stuff that a lot of bands on major labels, like, as in their debuts on a major label, and they get everything before the record's even out, like, they get everything handed to them, I would And if you, we could go back in time and say, you can have this for your first record, I'd say, no, no way, I don't want it. I want it the way that we've got it, because we've had to work to get to this point, and I appreciate it so much more.
But that's why I think, when I'm saying about people having this, they're really rooting for you, and that I think that's instrumental to it, is because you guys have worked so fucking hard that you totally deserve it. And so the Cure tour, when did that come in?
It was just another. It wasn't that far off the single coming out. I think Robert just emailed Andy and just said, would you like to go on tour? And it was just like another one of those moments where like, would you like to do the US tour? And we're like, yeah, of course we'll do anything to do it, you know? And he said, right, cool, I'll go and sort it. And he sorted it, and then the venues came through, and that was just...
So one of the ones that kind of stood out on when you were talking about it online was the Hollywood Bowl, and that seemed to be like a really...
They were good, those ones. They were strange because they were outside, and the front is like people can be eating their dinner and stuff like that in front of you. That's pretty strange. Andy's thought his aunt was on fire. He's a vegetarian, so he doesn't really get the smell of well-cooked meat now and again. So somebody ordered a well-cooked steak right in front of him, and he thought his aunt was on fire. And then he was like, no, it's, oh, shit. And he's ordered the filet mignon. That was weird. But I think there was so many gigs on that tour, like, that were just... I mean, all the gigs were brand new kind of stuff to us. We're not used to playing those size of venues. I don't think we'll ever be used to it. I mean, I think once you do one or two, you know what you're in for, but I think getting used to it's another thing. But I think the Madison Square Garden one was just the three of those gigs. That sounds mental coming out of my mouth. The three gigs there, I think I got told, and the venue wrote online that we got a standing ovation every night, and we were like the support band, you know? And that's like, I don't know, I don't see many.
And were many of your family and friends at these shows?
My mum, my dad, my sister managed to come out.
God.
My girlfriend, sorry, fiance, she'd get that right. she came out for like the New York gigs, and other friends, and the Frightened Rabbit guys got to see us in LA. Doc. From Churches got to see us in New York, and Ian Cook from Churches, and Campbell, the manager who used to be in Aerogram, because we've got that connection as well, because we toured with each other. They came to see us, and then there was a lot of people from over the years of touring America that we became friends with, that we were able to get into the gigs, and there was something really special about that, being able to give them the opportunity to see The Cure, and even just say, look, well, this is mental, it's, look, we're playing. It's just a nice thing to have those nights with people that had invested in us for a long time, if you know what I mean, and to be able to experience that with them. So yeah, a lot of people, we were lucky that a lot of people came out, and it was definitely without a doubt the best 2 months of my life. I don't think. But
your nerves before going doing these shows, I mean, how did you compose yourself?
That's a good question. The fact that Robert had invited us and thought that, wanted to give us the opportunity to play in front of these people, it was to go and prove to him that he'd made the right decision,
right,
if you know what I mean.
Okay.
Which is nervous, and to be honest, that was the most nervous after a while, like that about trying to please. It didn't matter about the thousands of people in the audience, it was to impress them and to show them that the opportunity we were given, we were taking with both hands, if you know what I mean. And Robert would ask for our set list every night, so we'd print it out and give it to him, so if there was a song we hadn't played yet that he wanted to hear, he would come out and see, and he would stand and watch us, and we'd see him after the gig, and he would say some lovely words though, ones that I'm going to keep to myself, like, just because they're like,
no, yeah,
like, it's, so some things are better kept to yourself, like, I'll always kind of keep with me. And the same way Andy, like, some of the stuff that he said to us was just, that gave us confidence as we were going on as well. The fact that we were told we were doing a good job, and like that, and the fact that people were reacting to us as well, like, we've been on tours and people like have not really got what we did. And
but it's a perfect pairing between the two of you, which is why I guess you can definitely hear the influences coming through. Progressing in time now. So Cocteau Twins.
Uh-huh.
And as I said at the start of the podcast, I'd never kind of really kind of understood. Well, no, I never even put the Cocteau Twins as a comparison with you guys. Mm. But I definitely, the vocals are something that I really kind of feel that I've almost, I get an influence.
Oh yeah, they're just, to me, they're like otherworldly.
Yeah.
Like, and it's the melodies more than anything. Like, to I think that I've been listening to the Cocteau Twins like pretty much non-stop. The Cure and the Cocteau Twins for the past 2 years.
Yeah.
I've been Like, that's been a staple for me. It's like, and it's not been, it's been a different album. Like, it changed, like, the song that I've picked today. If you had asked me last week, it would have been a different song, you know. I think they grew up, they're from 10 minutes down the road from us as well,
totally.
which is quite strange, Grangemouth, which is a strange place. but yeah, you've got there must be something in the water type thing. But I just thought everything about that band. The vocals are just, it's something that I could never aspire to do because, one, she's a different gender to me.
Yeah.
and just the style's different, but at the same time, I think there's things that I've definitely, I have been influenced by that, like, and even song structures, and, like, I think Andy's been heavily in, like, listening to them as well, so... the next record will be a Cocteau Twins rip-off record.
And do you think that, because obviously your tracks, you seem to be the kind of the next generation of these bands in Scotland. You know, I was talking to you earlier about a documentary on BBC Four, and it was talking about India and things like that. But it's like you are that next staple in terms of Scottish bands, and not that that's any pressure or anything.
That's
but...
terrifying. That's absolutely terrifying. It's just like things have went downhill now if we're the only...
But do you worry about what's going to happen going forward with I guess music in general in Scotland and beyond?
I worry about everything every single day. Like, so this is just another thing to add to my my worry list. Yeah, I'm a bit of a worrier. As far as the music industry goes, we've never felt like we've really been that big of a part of it.
No.
So,
which is a good thing.
We've never been welcomed with open arms for it. And we're very lucky that people that like our band buy our music. I do believe that, I know that's the as record sales are going down and down and down. The only worry I have about being in the band and making records is to be able to make the next record.
Yeah.
And if we can constantly keep doing that, then fair enough. And money means absolutely nothing to me. Like, I need it to keep clothes, keep my skinny jeans on, and like to be able to eat and have like trying to have some sort of standard of living.
Yeah.
But like, I don't aim to have, like, if I could get by doing this for the rest of my life and just get by, then that's all I want. So record sales and stuff, we've never sold any record amount of records, so we're not losing anything yet. But it is worrying for other the whole. Who was I talking to the other day that like record sales are going down, and they're going to keep going down. So bands just need to find other avenues to be able to keep the record now. Somebody said to me they think that the records is just a facilitator for going on tour, for merchandise and all that kind of stuff. Records are really important to me. They're a documentation of my, like, well, as far as my lyrics go, of my life. It depresses me that people aren't buying records as much.
Mm-hmm.
We were just talking, we still buy records, and it's something we like but it's something that we love doing, and something that can give so much back to you. Like Noel Gallagher said recently, it was like, people will go and spend £3 on a coffee, but they won't even, like, you can spend, buy an album for like £5 to £6 now, like digitally, they won't spend that for something that could ultimately change their life.
Yeah.
And that was a great analogy. I was like, that's sad. It's just really, really sad. Like,
something as instantaneous as that, but you can keep that for the rest of your life.
That's yours. And you can meet... basically, what music's done for me is, like, I've met friends. I've been able to travel. I've been able to write music myself, like, and which has helped me get over, like, different things, like things that I wouldn't be able to talk about in everyday life, and like get me through certain stages of my life. And spending £6 on a record by somebody else that can introduce me to those, to another side of that, I would take all my money,
totally.
You know, like it's. But as I say, we are a very lucky band that people, like we've spoke about before at the gig and like at the Barrowlands and the messages that we get every day from people, like I feel there is a connection there that they see that by buying the concert ticket or buying the record or even sending a message to us, if you know what I mean, it's helping us keep doing this. And that's the goal for me. I mean, I think that's.
But there's no snobbery with you. There's a lot of bands that I feel sometimes think they're too cool to do this and they've got to act a certain way. Whereas you really dedicate the time to your fans, and no matter who the fuck they are, I mean, you guys have got a really core group of fans.
You're amazing.
Blue, for example, Hussaina.
Oh, she's amazing. I saw her at the weekend.
So her, for example, who a lot of people will know from, she invests so much travelling around. And me and my other half, who's in a band as well, and she follows their band as well. And it's phenomenal.
Yeah.
And that's what we used to be like as well. And I think it's bringing back that kind of real nostalgia.
Yeah, I think it's giving people something to, this sounds quite corny, but it's giving somebody, it's giving other people something to believe in that's actually real, instead of like a faceless band where there's a machine behind them.
Yeah.
You know, like our music's very serious, and as I said earlier, we don't take ourselves too serious.
No.
I mean, I don't take myself. There was one of Chris, who works as our manager in America, was just going like, on stage, you're a maniac. Like, and he's like, I don't get that. Well, I get it, but like off stage, you're the biggest geek I've ever met in my life. It's just like, all right, cool. And he's like, but that's a compliment. He's like,
totally.
he's like, there's people that will go and do what you just did, and then come off stage and think that they own the like walking about like Richard Ashcroft in the Bittersweet Symphony video. Whereas I hate that. I don't those people are boring, you know, the people that do that, I find them so boring and so one dimensional. It's just like, it doesn't make me want to invest in, I think those days are maybe gone of those people, like people.
Just be a nice person.
Yeah. All the people that are like, we've played on that playlist, what I've also discovered is, I've not met the Cocteau Twins, but they, and I won't meet them at a gig obviously, but all the people I've met there, lovely people.
I may not always love you, but long as there are stars above you, you never need to doubt it. I'll make you so sure about it. God only knows what I'd be without you. If you should ever leave me, well, life would still go on, believe me. The world could show nothing to me. So what good would living do me? God only knows what I'd be without you.
Good would living to me. God only knows.
Now, this is probably the cheeriest song on your list. Well, no, Design for Life's quite... But Beach Boys...
I forgot about this, oh yeah.
So, God only knows, I saw this recently at Primavera, and it was very emotional. Mm-hmm. So, why this one?
Also, when we're writing, and like Andy and I are talking about vocal melodies and things like that, and song structures, the Beach Boys come up quite a lot. You wouldn't maybe think that within our music, to be honest. This song is, it's also, without getting too soppy, it's when if you're on tour, when I'm on tour and it's maybe been a bit of a shit day, it kind of reminds me of home a little bit.
Oh, that's good.
Even though home is not the Californian sunshine, the Beach Boys.
It's a shite Scottish dream.
Aye. But like, it just reminds me of people from back home, and I think it's a nice, it's a moment of clarity, I suppose. I genuinely do love the Beach Boys, and like, we actually have been influenced by them quite a bit, because if you melodically, it's genius, you know. Mm-hmm. And the songs are pretty sad as well. They might sound quite happy, but they're pretty miserable.
Yeah, no, there's melancholy behind them.
But it's definitely one of those songs for me anyway, that it's a homesick song, if you know what I mean. Or if I'm missing home a wee bit, I'll kind of put on the Beach Boys and pretty much this song as well. So it just shows that I'm a bit of a soppy get as well.
But genuine congratulations on everything this year, and I hope it continues to be very, very successful. Yes.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.